There's a lot of new Bud Light news from over the weekend, including it losing shelf space to competitors in grocery stores as it's getting, it's just getting dusty on the shelves. And the ad agency who initially connected Bud Light with the fated form of their destruction, Dylan, finally speaking out. Lots of interesting things, and as well as Bud Light essentially admitting defeat, admitting they can't fix this anymore. And that's all because of all of you being so tenacious and being so principled on this. And I'm really, really proud for basically the first ever culture battle win for people who are not on the far left. Bud Light marketing VP who lost their job over $26 billion Dylan Mulvaney mistake is tight-lipped outside their $8 million Central Park home as her friend says, quote, she can't talk about it. Now, if there's something that somebody who lives in an $8 million Central Park home knows, it's good old American grit, hard-working, blue-collar, Bud Light-drinking Americans. Bud Light's marketing executive, quote, says, I can't talk about the controversial decision to hire Dylan. Vice President Alyssa Heinerschneid took a leave of absence earlier this year following the controversy surrounding the Brewing Giants' decision to use Dylan Mulvaney for the March Madness campaign. Heinerschneid, yikes, who is 39, was not the only one to step down after the backlash, which created the biggest corporate disaster of the decade, as the VP for mainstream brands, Daniel Blake, also removed himself from the role. But their sudden departures appear premature after bosses said the decision to work with Dylan was made by an outside agency without management awareness or approval. When approached by DailyMail.com regarding claims that they had no idea the campaign, Heinerschneid declined to comment, but a friend said, quote, she's not supposed to talk about it. She can't. Well, because she got paid. These people who are super rich, they stay super rich. I'm sure she did get fired. I'm sure she got the opportunity to, quote unquote, step down and get some sort of severance package to be the sacrificial lamb for the outrage, but it didn't work. That's why they threw another person at the heels of the outrage mob, and that didn't work. As Bud Light's losses now equal nearly $30 billion, Bud Light maker Anheuser-Busch InBev has lost a whopping $27 billion in market value in the wake of its star-crossed partnership with Dylan Mulvaney, most recently slammed by 4% stock drop this week. InBev's market cap fell to $107.44 billion through the end of May, down more than $27 billion from the $135 billion it had on March 31st. The stock is headed to an official bear market, a 20% drop as the boycott continues. Well, if you look at it today, the stock was up on Friday because, you know, essentially the whole market was up on Friday, but it's back on its initial backwards downward trend. It's down a half a point today. Could it get down a full point? It'll be interesting when it really hits that bear market if you see a more rapid sell-off, a more pronounced bailing on top of it. What's also interesting is the ad agency that hired Dylan for the Bud Light is in, quote, serious panic mode. An 8-year-old marketing firm out of San Francisco, was responsible for the partnership with Dylan Mulvaney, and the disastrous tie-up sent the firm into serious panic mode, the Post has learned. Captivate, a San Mateo, California-based firm that pairs social media influencers with major consumer brands, is the outlet that introduced Anheuser-Busch to the 26-year-old biological male, resulting in the viral TikTok video that has since become a textbook case of marketing gone wrong, sources close to the situation said. Nationwide backlash over the video, which unleashed a firestorm when it was posted back on April 1st. Quote, there was a lot of chatter among employees about what the blowback the firm might face over the botched campaign, according to the source. Internally, the company was in serious panic mode. It couldn't immediately be learned whether Captivate, which claims to have a database of more than 1 million influencers on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter, was also responsible for the now infamous Bud Light beer can that bore Mulvaney's image. It wasn't clear whether Captivate played a direct role in producing the TikTok video. Well, co-founded in 2015 by Krishna Subramanian, a Silicon Valley investor who sold online ad network Blue Lithium to Yahoo back in 2007, for $300 million. God, these numbers are just like, they just make my eyes gloss over. Captivate has worked with Walmart, American Express, Twitter, and Kraft Heinz. Why would they be worried about it? And they're just trying to get themselves some free marketing. I mean, ultimately, Anheuser-Busch InBev is the one that signed off on this. You know, they're the ones that signed off on the deal. They're the ones that greenlit it. And that's why there are two different Bud Light executives gone. Now, this on top of Bud Light salespeople receiving, quote, middle fingers and car horns as the boycott passes its seventh week. Now, again, I don't love that the people that are just trying to do their job are getting drug into this, but it is what it is. I'm frustrated that this is dragged down as long as it has, the president of Bud Light Distributor reportedly said of the boycott. Well, really, they only have one person to blame, and that's Bud Light. They could have ended this weeks ago. They could have ended this 2 months ago, but they were more concerned about keeping their woke social credit score rating or whatever it's called than actually fixing anything. They could have come out and said, holy moly, did we miss on that? Here's some free beer, everybody. And it would have been over. They could have did that the very next day. But the reality is that they were going to lose. They were worried about losing their ESG score, their EIC score, whatever it is. And so they didn't say anything. And now they haven't tweeted in almost 2 months. They're losing out on the entire summer advertising blitz when beer sales are at an all-time high. Many frontline Bud Light salespeople who rely on commission are also losing out on businesses as a result of the boycott. Quote, this has really, really killed a lot of guys who are commission-based. That's who it's really hurting, one supervisor told ABC. There's nothing they could have done. This was thrown in their faces. I agree, and it sucks for them. More than 7 weeks have passed since Bud Light sales tanked, and it was revealed that the company partner, we already know, good people are going to start leaving. They're quitting now. The boycott is now causing pain all the way down to supply chain. Sales supervisors and distributors for Bud Light told ABC News. Good people are starting to leave, are going to start leaving because they aren't making money. Former Anheuser-Busch InBev executive Anson Friericks told ABC News. The situation has impacted our people and especially our frontline workers, the delivery drivers, sales representatives, our wholesalers, Bud owners, and servers. Also, at a recent meeting with Bud Light salespeople, the president of distributor in the Midwest reportedly told employees that the boycott will hopefully end soon. None of this is your fault, and none of this is my fault, he said. I'm frustrated that this has dragged on as long as it has, the president of the distributor said. I'm hoping we're moving in the right direction. I don't think that this is a boycott anymore. I think that people are just tired of it, and Budweiser was the straw that broke the woke camel's back in a way, you know, and you see more, you know, this Bud Light would need to, oh wait, sorry, here, this other story, mini call for a boycott, video showing unsold cases of Bud Light at store has gone viral as the brand remains embroiled in controversy. Here you see this story saying, he said that Bud Light would need to disavow Mulvaney to win back customers. I agree with that. Bud Light would need to completely repudiate woke culture and totally disavow Dylan Mulvaney in very clear terms. Manarino said via Twitter DMs. They need to go to, the level they need to go to would be impossible for a corporate company in 2023 because they'd anger the other side. So it looks like the boycott is here to stay. Yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like to me. I mean, Bud Light has just given up. They've just given up here. They know that they really can't do what they need to do, or they refuse to do what they need to do, and that's just it for them. I mean, they can't do anything else. You know, and just to recap, so we've seen $30 billion of market cap erased. We've seen all the frontline workers taking all the brunt of the backlash, and the company says nothing. Good people now leaving, getting ready to quit. Drivers quitting the company because they're getting harassed doing their jobs, which, again, I don't agree with, but it's just the truth. You have a whole lot of these, just everybody getting pummeled. Bud Light sitting on the shelves. It's become a meme at this point, seeing pictures. I've seen pictures over in the UK people have sent me. And, you know, now suddenly people, you know, articles like this say, dear CEOs, please focus on profit, not politics. Only now are we getting articles like this from Bloomberg. You know, I think that the politics is profit for a lot of these companies. And, you know, getting woke, being woke, has almost universally been a good business move for people who are publicly traded in particular. This year in 2023, you know, it's a weird year. Suddenly, you know, non-woke, you know, centrist level, just everyday people have kind of had enough of it. And, you know, Bud Light proved to a lot of people that they could be successful. And as of right now, Bud Light has still said nothing on Twitter. They're not going to apologize. They don't want to apologize because they're not actually sorry. They're at a position now where they're just not, I think at this point, can't do it. Can't do it, won't do it. They refuse to tweet. They're just going to fade into, you know, again, this isn't going to go anywhere. This isn't going to stop all summer long. So if they're willing to eat it all summer long, let everyone switch over to Yingling, and everyone, you know, get all the, I mean, that's, you're going to see class action lawsuits soon from shareholders who are going to say, look, this is a pretty easy problem to fix. We've seen companies come out and turn it around. Bud Light is refusing to do that, and we've lost all this money. Mark my words, there will be class action lawsuits against these CEOs who are, in my opinion, probably on the take to push a lot of this woke ideology, and they're all acting like they didn't know, but I bet you a lot more of them knew than they'll ever admit. You know, we often hear, in particular from aging feminist athletes who are trying to pull up the ladder behind them, that men and women are exactly the same, and biological men should be able to compete against biological women in feats of strength and athleticism. Every time we see that play out on a fair battlefield, it's an absolute disaster. In fact, it doesn't even have to be a fair battlefield. In fact, the United States women's soccer team just lost to a bunch of elderly British guys 12-0 and got mercied after just 40 minutes. But yeah, men and women are definitely the same and should be playing on the same battlefield, by the way. Former U.S. women's soccer players lose 12-0 to a bunch of older British dudes in 40 minutes. Former players with the United States national women's team, the reigning World Cup champions, decided to play in an independent soccer tournament in North Carolina and face off against Wrexham, a club from Wales owned by Ryan Reynolds, with a bunch of older dudes, and it went exactly like you'd expect. So you see, this is a message for Ryan Reynolds, Van City Records. Let's see.
Messages, ready? This message is for Ryan Reynolds and Rob Macklin. One, you should be here right now with your squad. Two, your team about to go down in North Carolina. Let's go!
Your team about to go down. Okay. We see NBC Sports Soccer. Here's how it went. What's the worst that could happen? We lose 16-0 to Wrexham. We don't care because we're living. We're being bold. We're being brave.
Heather, what's going on over here? You guys are, look at this. They're fraternizing with the enemy. I saw you talking with Mark Howard. But look, hey, I love that you guys are here, that you're playing, that this is all women. Maybe not the scoreline you were wanting to see, but what's
the spin.
Perspective on what's happening.
Yeah, listen, we're super proud. Like, we're so happy to be here at this event. Hopefully we've proven to anybody, like, just go for it.
What did you prove? You lost 12-0 and they stopped the match early because you were getting obliterated. You didn't even score a single goal. We're living, we're being bold, we're being brave.
Live, right? And like, what's the worst thing that can happen? We lose 16-0 to Wrexham. We don't care because we're living, we're being bold, we're being brave. We're having a lot of fun. Honestly, the U.S. has really warmed to Wrexham, obviously, after what Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney have done.
I mean, this is incredible amounts of cope. This is Olympic levels of cope. Oh yes, so stunning, so brave. This via not the bee. This will only totally help win people over to the cause of equal pay for the women's national team. Someone get Megan Rapinoe in here for damage control. even brighter hair, should do so. The modified game only lasted 40 minutes, just under half the normal time of a match. Imagine if it had gone the full 90. These are some of the best female athletes in the world, and the men playing them weren't even trying. It looks effortless for the men. I know this is controversial, but men and women are different, and they have different skill levels. Women are awesome and should be free to play whatever sport they want, but can we stop pretending that putting men pretending to be girls on the women's team is a good or fair idea? Yeah, one wonders how like an all-trans team might do. I wonder if they would have at least gotten a goal. And by the way, this isn't even the first time this has happened. This has happened a multitude of times in history. Every time, a complete disaster for women. How about this time when the U.S. team lost 5-2 to a team of 15-year-old boys? This is a U.S. national team. But not even the likes of the legendary midfielder Carly Lloyd could prevent the U.S. women's national team from crashing to a shock defeat against a Dallas club team of 15-year-old boys, 5-2. Jillian Ellis, side face of Russia in a stern friendly this evening, and we were hoping for a routine win against FC Dallas teens, but the U.S. ended up losing 5-2 on the night, and will have to up their performance to get anything out of Russia. Whether Lloyd played any role in the friendly remains unclear, but things haven't gone too well for the World Cup holders in recent weeks. Just last month, the U.S. lost the She Believes Cup, losing to both England and France despite recording an opening win against Germany. Why would they even keep taking these matches? Why are these women, like, somebody's in their ear gassing them up thinking, you know, hey, you're just every bit as good as the boys are. I mean, you're just not. I mean, there are certainly individual cases where one particular woman is better than a particular man at a sport, but at a level where the cream rises to the top, where you're only facing the absolute best from both genders, no woman's team is going to beat a man's team in any, upsets might exist. But this is just yet another reminder. You can see this from Outkick. U.S. women's soccer team thrashed by Wrexham men's team made up of older players. Wrexham managed to score 7 goals in the opening 20 minutes, with a 46-year-old Lee Trundle having himself a day with 4 goals to his name. The shot count was 39-5 in favor of Wrexham when the final whistle blew. We're super proud. Hopefully we proved that people should just go for it. I mean, like, go for what? I mean, I don't even understand. I've been involved in games like this, but basketball, after you jump off to a massive early lead without trying at all, you eventually just stop trying to play offense entirely and give a patronizing effort on defense. It gets so awkward just piling on, even when you aren't trying to. They probably could have won by 40. I mean, good on them for taking on the men's team. The sad truth of is Wrexham had suddenly decided to identify as women, we all would be hearing that there's no biological advantages men have over women. Yeah, I think absolutely good credit where credit is due. Like, you know, good for them for taking on the challenge. But, you know, how many times do we have to see this play out? You know, like, it's not even, I mean, it's hilarious. 2023, we celebrate men defeating women. I'm shocked. Why are U.S. women's soccer teams so bad? Because they're not men. Wrexham should become trans women. They dominate for the next 20 years. Why do they lose so badly? Did you think it would be different, the outcome, than when they lost to 15-year-old kids? Yeah, I don't know. You know. It's pretty hilarious on the oof factor scale. I think that the more examples we get of this, like, look, I don't mind them playing the game, obviously, but it just really drives home the fact that, you know, there are biological differences between men and women, in spite of what mainstream media likes to continue to say. Sure, maybe, you know, I would hear, you know, in feats of intelligence or things like that, but things that that require, you know, strength, prolonged strength, you know, things that testosterone naturally help with. It's just, you can't go against, you know, a zillion years of evolution and biology just because somebody gets a lot of likes and retweets too. One of the biggest phenomenons on the internet, really, in that I've seen on YouTube since the van life stuff, is a prominent uprising of a podcast called the Whatever Podcast. This is a, you know, it's a panel type show that generally pits very normal, basic type takes against the extreme lunacy of like the e-girl or the or a feminist or whatever the case is. And it produces, in a 2 to 3 hour show, innumerable extraordinarily popular clips of women sounding extremely dumb. Now, part of this is by design. Part of this is by accident. But what it means is you've got essentially a worldwide phenomenon of a show that got popular through YouTube Shorts. If you look at their YouTube channel, it's got a hodgepodge of just about everything from camel toe pranks to, I mean, just a channel that's always thrived, tried to be, you know, viral. I don't know if they bought this channel from somebody, but, you know, a Cobra Kai prank. This channel's been around forever, and then they found this format called the Whatever Podcast, which, if you look at their shorts, it is extremely popular in that particular perspective, or people making shorts of it. And, you know, the podcast clips, see absolute massive success. So, you know, shout out to the hosts and whoever's running this. They obviously have a money printing machine here. And anytime you have that, you have the mainstream media getting upset about it. So you have this article, "Making Women Look Dumb is a Disturbing New Podcast Trend." I'm sorry, New York Post and Vice before this. This has been, you know, one of the women posting the L said, "Have you considered these women are actually just dumb?" And yes, many of them are. And they're the ones that are the most clip-worthy, or the ones that actually got the assignment and know that there's some percentage of that audience that is going to subscribe to their OnlyFans or give them money or subscribe to their... These are fame-seeking young women who will knowingly walk into a situation where they know that they're going to be memed on. And once you have a platform like they have, you have an endless supply of women looking for the easy way out. And you see pretty many, a lot of them are dumb, but he does as leading questions and have no good answers, which result in humiliation. I mean, a lot of these, you know, it's not really that, to me, it's not an interesting podcast because I can just look at, you know, I see after like 30 seconds of these women are, it's like an agreement. Like, yeah, I know I'm, you know, I just want to sell more OnlyFans subscriptions. So whatever, make fun of me. And to me, that's not very compelling, but I do understand that it's entertaining and I'm not going to like dunk on anyone for enjoying it. This says, "For shame. A podcast with hundreds of thousands of subscribers." Well, I think their channel has 4.5 million subscribers, although, you know, their podcast episodes, at least on video format, do pretty good. And you know, we are between, you know, two and, well, if you look at their latest episodes, wait, what the heck? Why are these all, what's going on? Why is this, where are all their... Latest is,
and
that's interesting. Streamed a month ago. Oh, it's all because it's live. That's right. So I don't know if they bought this old channel or what the situation was, but their live streams get a couple hundred thousand views. I don't know what their audio is like, but every once in a while they do pretty well. And again, good for them. A podcast with hundreds of thousands of subscribers and followers across platforms is stoking the flames of controversy by belittling female guests and making them look dumb. Look, I mean, many of them are dumb. That's just a fact. And many of them make more money than the average American selling pictures of the b-hole. So, you know, I don't know, I guess, who's the dumb one. Whatever is hosted by Brian Atlas, Masquerade does a dating show while delving into gender roles, body counts, and legitimacy of the patriarchy. This guy's probably going to end up getting canceled, too. If his show gets much bigger, if I have any advice to give Brian Atlas, just chill where you're at right now. You know, be happy. You're probably making deep into the six figures every month. Be happy. You know, stack your cash. Don't buy sports cars. Don't piss it away on fancy watches. Take that money. Put it in the bank. You know, live within your means. Because the machine will eventually come for you if you get much bigger than this. The podcast team uses social media to seek women panelists, only to, quote, later roast them in online snippets, pandering to the virality of inflammatory hot takes. In other words, it's perfect clickbait. Well, if you get a bunch of people in front of a camera for 7 hours, or for 3, 4, 5 hours, or whatever the case is, there's going to be a lot of stuff in and out of context that people say that is perfect for clipping, which is how this show got popular, at least in my opinion. I'd never seen it before. I've seen their shorts, like, getting every, just nonstop promoted. In one episode, the panelists, who are all women, rate themselves as 10s, much to Atlas's shock. That's probably not his real name. Maybe it is. I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to rate any of you. I'm not going to rate you guys, but none of you are a 10, prompting a chorus of agreement in the comments by users cruelly joking about the women's weight and appearance. In another, he grills the panelists about their body counts or how many people they've been intimate with and has met with resistance. It doesn't matter to me, but it matters to you guys, one woman said, gesturing to the men sitting across the table. So I'm not going to put myself out there and say my body count just for you two to ridicule me. While the OnlyFans model, Nicole, admitted, well, creative name, that her appearance on the podcast was to bolster her own following, like I said, she told Vice that the clips were definitely chosen to create controversy. No kidding. Don't you want that? I mean, I make her look dumb and shame her. Well, yes. I mean, that is the point. And you knew that when you signed up for it. No givesies backsies. You don't get to then say, oh, I got a bunch of new subscribers to my account where I sell pictures of my b-hole, but I'm actually the real victim here. Please cancel, you know, this podcast. This is, I don't know if I'd put it in the same category as Fresh and Fit, maybe. I don't consume these shows. You know, they're just not for me, I'll say. It's like I can look at a group of people and just know that they're all there for all their own ulterior motives and that there's really no point to the content existing other than to be entertaining, and which I respect and understand. It's funny. People put it on the background. They laugh. That's fine. On Twitter and TikTok, the video's provocative one-line captions lure thousands to millions of views. OnlyFans girls get roasted. They think they're tens, but what about with no makeup? Reads another tweet. I mean, it's great. This is probably owned by some, like, Saudi Arabian production company or something. I'm willing to bet there's probably some, like, management behind it. You know, and I think that, like, I'm not really impressed by any of the big brain takes, but sometimes you just want to turn your brain off and enjoy, you know, people being stupid. I mean, Jerry Springer was popular for a reason. The podcast following has grown amid backlash, with aghast critics slamming the show for talking down to women while dubbing Atlas an Andrew Tate wannabe. Tell me you despise women without telling me you despise women. And don't forget the condescension, one Redditor snarked. Ooh, a Redditor. Is it just me, or do all these women look incredibly uncomfortable? Wrote another. No, every woman that is there is extremely comfortable with it, and they signed up to get famous. They signed up to go on that podcast to get eyeballs. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that that's why they're there. There's no way, you know, like I said, Jerry Springer never had a problem getting guests. Now, some of them were real, some of them less real, but there's an innumerable amount of people willing to go where there are eyeballs. Content creator Drew Affalo, who counts 8 million TikTok followers, thanks to her zingy clapbacks, misogynistic men has expressed her displeasure for Atlas's content. Shocking. In one clip, Affalo stitches a snippet of Atlas calling a female panelist not a 10, reference to her looks, in which she says, "That's just your opinion." Wow. See, this is why I don't watch this show. Wow, like, wow, hot take. That's just like your opinion, man. Yeah, wow, thanks. Riveting content on both sides. In response, Atlas continues to reiterate his stance on her attractiveness because it bothers him that it doesn't bother her. Oh, okay, well, there's some actual content. In another, Affalo responds to the video of whatever podcast featuring Atlas claims that men are more oppressed than women. Why people continue to go on this podcast, I just can't even begin to understand. Really? It's the most obvious thing on the planet. Like, it's for clout. Any idiot can see that. And the fact that, like, you know, by the way, everybody wins here. There are no victims of this. These people go on the show willingly. They get exposure. They get clout, good or bad. It works for them. And that's the end of it. You know, Vice, the latest trend in podcasts is making women look dumb. I mean, it's...
So both of you do OnlyFans. How much do you make, Nicolette?
I make a lot.
How much per month?
I think it's like kind of tacky to say like exactly how much money you make.
I mean, it's tacky to be on OnlyFans in the first place,
but... I'm fired.
I know.
That's not even that good of a roast. I don't get it. I will never get this show. Like, of course...
I mean, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. That's like bad vibes right there. Like, oh my god. Like,
disagreement is bad vibes.
But...
What, is that content? I don't know. Look, people watch the Power Slap, all right? You know, I like Paul Blart. You know, so I guess, you know, but, you know, I don't, these women go on there willingly. What I will defend about this show is that these women go on here willingly and they say these things willingly and they do it in exchange for clout. There are no victims here and there will always be women willing to and men willing to exchange their humility, their reputation for money. And that's why these shows, it's no different than Jerry Springer or Maury Povich or any of these other shows. It's just a new format. You cram as many people in a room as you can. You put a microphone in front of everybody's face, which they do. And then you manufacture viral content. It's a great business model. I'm happy whoever is behind the show is successful and I wish them the best. But just stay this size. Word to the wise. Target continues to circle the drain as new and more interesting emails get revealed to the public. Their stock absolutely tanking, their employees turning against them. Essentially, it's a full-blown disaster for Target. And this is what happens when you get woke, when you want to draw that line in the sand where instead of just, you know, selling people Doritos, you have to also sell them an ideology. So let's start with this email. From Greg Price sharing, "I have obtained an internal email from Target that they sent to their employees today, which asked them to participate in, quote, Pride Week. Activities include queer bingo, a presentation on how to be a better ally, and Pride Plus Pro Sports panel." Now, I don't know about you, but I'm just trying to get on with my workday. You know, I don't think that if I'm some hourly employee at Target that I'm super interested in, you know, also getting brainwashed. But also you say, "Take care together tomorrow at 2 p.m. Central. Join the Disability and Mental Health Business Council for a discussion about mental health." And then what gets cut off here is emotion/feeling wheel is available to help you. What is an emotional wheel? I mean, it's literally corporate sponsored indoctrination, isn't it? I mean, it's just simply that. I mean, there's no other way to really to put it. You see here, according to Fox, Target hit with another stock downgrade. Now, the entire market is down today for sure. But interesting, we'll see how we'll get to Target stock here in a minute. T-Bank Capital Markets on Monday cut the retailer share to a sector weight from overweight as a resumption of student loan payments stipulated by Congress debt ceiling agreement poses a sizable headwind for discretionary spending for shoppers, which have elevated discretionary sales mix and younger college-educated core consumer demographic. That's people who shop at Target. Last week, JP Morgan also downgraded the stock, with analysts citing the possibility of a decline in sales due to consumers pulling back spending amid persistent inflation. Meanwhile, student loan repayments are scheduled to resume later this year under the terms of the deal to raise the debt limit. The pause in student loan repayments will end by August 30th. That's only 2 months away. Shares have fallen over 20% during the quarter as the retailer deals with the fallout from its Pride merchandising marketing campaign, which offered items that included female-style swimsuits with the option to tuck your junk. Other products were labeled as thoughtfully fit on multiple body types and gender expressions, a gender-fluid mug, and a variety of adult clothing with slogans such as super queer among them. Now again, I know people have their religious reasons or whatever reason. They may have a problem with the wholesale, you know, the entire line. For me, I don't care if they want to sell this stuff, but, you know, keep it away from kids. You know, I think that that's a reasonable thing. You don't have to put it in a back room at the store, but, you know, maybe you don't have to cram it down everybody's throat right when they walk in the door. These are normal requests. And that's just not going to be heeded by Target. They're committed to the cause. They have a diversity, equity, and inclusion role, person with a big salary. And you see Target is down another 2.21% today, another $3 per share. If you look at the month, it's down $26.25 a share. And it's been absolutely nosediving since the boycott. Coincidentally, Walmart seems doing just fine, isn't it? Walmart, the last 5 days, going up and up and up. Now, over the last month, it was also going down, but coincidentally, now skyrocketing in the other direction. I wonder if it's the inverse of what's going on with Target. Maybe that's where they suspect people will shift their buying dollars to. With things tightening up in the economy, certainly maybe analysts are thinking that more people will be interested in shopping at Target or at Walmart as opposed to Target. Sure will be interesting. Now, it's going to be interesting to see because they really are stuck between a rock and a hard place. LGBT Target employee vents, she no longer feels valued, calls company hypocritical. Pride Month is underway after backlash for some Southern stores to locations move their Pride displays away from the storefronts. A Sunday report from the Washington Post detailed an Illinois Target employee, Wen Park's take on the move. When I started here at Target, I went through countless inclusivity and anti-discrimination trainings. Why did you go through any of those? Your job is to stock the shelves and help the customer or the guest find the items. I mean, that's the start of it right there. Why is a company running anyone through countless trainings about anti-discrimination? Park, who identifies as queer, found it devastating. The Post said, employees are strongly led to believe that these are Target's values, that everyone is equal and belongs. But they are. Everyone is equal and belongs. Do you need a t-shirt to reinforce that? I no longer feel valued as an employee. The change took place at a broader scale, however, calling stores to reconsider the merchandise as well as employee safety. One manager at a South Florida location told the Post that the far right critics have slapped employees with labels like groomers and accused the company as a whole of shoving its woke agenda down their throats. Look, the employees who work there, you know, I don't think that they are, you know, they're not directly involved in literally any of this and people taking it out on them. It's dumb. It's not their fault. Now, certainly there are some employees that, you know, if you want to take it out on their diversity, equity, and inclusion manager who makes, you know, $500,000 a year, probably, that'd be fine. But like a frontline employee who stocks shelves or who's a checker, they have no opinion on this. Like they have no part in this. You know, the outlet said the manager, who chose to remain anonymous, said another incident occurred at a location storefront when a disgruntled customer used a scissors to cut her store credit card to pieces, declaring she would never shop there again. Okay, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? That seems peaceful. Nobody took any tennis shoes. The retail giant is haunted by the controversy. Took action to cool the temperature on the issues in some ways, including holding a 10-minute discussion on employee safety at an emergency meeting held before Pride Month even began. I think given the current situation with Bud Light, the company is terrified of a Bud Light situation, a company insider told Fox News Digital. According to Insider, the remainder of the call was focused on making the controversial Pride items less visible in stores by moving items away from storefronts, taking down mannequins, removing signage, each of which garnered criticism from the LGBTQ activists and employees like Wen Park. Everyone was like, thank God, because they're all on the front lines dealing with it, the insider said. Last week, in response to the uptick in hostility towards company team members, CEO Brian Cornell wrote in part to his employees, what you've seen in recent days went well beyond discomfort, and it's been gut-wrenching to see what you've confronted with in our aisles. He said from his $500 million salary, and a guy that probably never steps foot in Target and probably chooses never to shop there. He also thanked employees at the retail giant centers for their patience and professionalism through the high volume of angry and abusive phone calls. I mean, again, I don't know. Are people calling their local stores and dunking on them? It's difficult to know. It seems unlikely and stupid if that's the case. Like, again, it's not their fault. You look at Target stock now down $3 a share. This has been a spectacular drop. You know, and again, this is the thing. People are going to talk about this when it talks about, it's going to lead to lawsuits. Elon Musk even said that. Target backs organization pushing U.S. demilitarization, Mount Rushmore shutdown for being a symbol of white supremacy. The more that keeps getting brought up, the more it keeps getting passed around, the more times you leave a like on this video, the more times you share it, we can have an impact. We're seeing it in real time. Since the St. Floyd protests of 2020, Target Corporation said it ramped up its diversity, equity, and inclusion work. How's that been going for you? I see you've been closing a lot of stores because of uncontrolled shoplifting. How's that been going? This agenda extended far beyond enhancing representation and support historically marginalized groups. Target accelerated its DEI program in response to BLM activism under the leadership of its diversity chief, Kiera Fernandez. The chief has demanded that white women get to work and combat systemic racism. Funny, I didn't think any person had any right to demand anything from anyone else. NDN, of course, they back the organization's called Land Back, called for America to give up its public land. The closure of Mount Rushmore, return that land to all public lands in the Black Hills, South Dakota, is our cornerstone battle, NDN said. This is who Target backs. Target Foundation's webpage reflected that it funded NDN Collective in 2022, a South Dakota-based nonprofit with a revenue stream that has reached as high as $50 million. NDN operates with a racial equality lens and is dedicated to building indigenous power. It seems like they've done a pretty good job of it. $50 million in revenue. And is dedicated to improving indigenous power through organizing, activism. No, they just bilk dumb woke corporations and get rich off it, and more power to them. But we'll see. Once the lawsuits start, we're really going to start to see what woke capitalism, the price of that. An interesting trend going on this month, this year, for maybe the first time in, probably since its induction of Pride Month, where it's been an unfettered, an unstoppable profit machine for woke companies. A lot of companies now are backing out, are changing their minds, are responding to backlash. And it's going to be a question of just how far people are willing to go, how many things they're willing to push back against. But right now, it seems like just about everything is getting shut down, and corporations, large and small, even the United States military, is undoing their woke in record time. And I don't think I've seen anything like this, whether it's the U.S. Navy or it's Major League Baseball or it's any of these other companies we're going to talk about. There's something interesting going on here. Major League Baseball quietly removes Pride logo from social media. Major League Baseball may have sensed a change in the political winds. Like the vast majority of modern corporations, Major League Baseball is usually eager to shore up its progressive credentials. As they do in most years, MLB changed their logo on June 1st to celebrate Pride Month, but with the current version of the LGBTQ plus flag as the background. But after just one day up on the league's social media accounts, it quietly disappeared, instead replaced by their traditional MLB logo just a day on both Facebook and Twitter, which is pretty interesting to me. You know, you're talking about Major League Baseball. This is like a standard fare in, oh yeah, we push, I mean, we saw them basically go and, you know, push their own player into a struggle session to apologize for having religious beliefs. And sure enough, if you look right now, still no Pride logo. So they moved it. They just removed it. The league is celebrating Lou Gehrig Day on Friday, June 2nd, which could have influenced their decision. But given the increased pushback from many fans, as they view as excessive Pride celebrations, it could have also been a calculated choice by the MLB. It could also at least be partially related to the widespread anger and frustration towards the Los Angeles Dodgers for their offensive decision making. The Dodgers have created a firestorm of controversy inside the game for its blatantly anti-Catholic stance. Given several players have spoken out against the team's disastrous choices, Major League Baseball may have decided to limit its Pride celebrations. The league, like most corporations, have been rapidly moving left. Most notably, this manifested itself with Rob Manfred caving to liberal activists and moving the All-Star Game out of Atlanta. Yeah, how'd that work out for him? There's nothing wrong with the league posting a Pride flag or celebrating a specific day, but many fans and players have felt that some specific celebrations have been targeted against those with sincerely held religious beliefs. Well, I would say this much at least. The thing with the religious beliefs, you know, I think that there's really one group of, you know, people in this country that you're allowed to, you know, disrespect, ignore, mock, and that's religious people, Christians, Catholics, in particular white ones. And it's been a long, I mean, it's just been a long known thing. So we look at MLB, that's gone. How about this one? So now the Navy removes Pride Month posts amid right-wing backlash. NASCAR, Major League Baseball also targeted. Companies daring to declare their support for Pride Month, including those that simply adopt a rainbow color logo for June, are facing online backlash from, quote, right-wing social media users, leading the Navy to delete its Pride posts as boycott threats against the company deemed woke for its outreach to the LGBTQ community continue to go viral. The United States Navy uploaded a Pride-themed Facebook cover photo June 1st, the first day of Pride Month, and replaced it with another photo less than 12 hours later, and it reportedly deleted posts for Pride Month from its Twitter and Instagram accounts. NASCAR and Major League Baseball also tweeted support of LGBTQ community, and their posts were quickly filled with replies and quote tweets from angry right-wing users, quick call to boycott for companies who celebrate Pride or engage in LGBTQ, quote, inclusive marketing. Well, I mean, is anybody surprised? I mean, you could only push people so long. And, you know, certainly I would say that people are getting a little tired of having stuff crammed into their face. Major League Baseball briefly changed its Facebook profile picture to a Pride-themed logo on Thursday, but reverted it back to the original by Friday after an onslaught of mean comments. Social media users on both sides were quick to notice that MLB Switch, popular queer content creator, don't know who they are, tweeted, the brands really aren't hanging with us this year, while conservative commentators celebrated the change. Some companies still changed their logos, social media icons like HP, Cisco, Pfizer, Citi, and Bank of America. Well, those are the brands of the resistance, right? Like that's how you really know that you are... Your the counterculture is when Pfizer backs you. By the way, surprising fact, Navy officials reported considered disabling comments on its Pride Month Instagram post to avoid comments from, quote, rude a-holes, according to email correspondence with Fox News. I mean, I feel like our Navy should be, like, worried about, you know, instilling fear in our enemies, not, you know, humiliating, getting crushed by its own citizens and social media posts, or that, you know, its own people that serve it. Profit before pride. Top firms such as Vogue, Pfizer, and General Electric are now accused of hypocrisy for celebrating Pride Month with rainbow logos in the United States, but not in the Middle East. Well, wow, isn't that interesting? That's something we've all talked about for a very long time. We've all talked about, you know, on this channel, for example, for a very long time, about the hilarious double standard. If you really roll with the LGBTQ community, then why aren't you doing so in communities where it's not genuinely, generally accepted, where you actually have to put some skin in the game? Well, they don't want to do that, do they? For LGBT Pride Month, many global corporations swapped out their logos on Twitter. By the way, homophobia destroyed. For substitutes featuring the pride colors, but now some are being called out for showing their support in the West, but not elsewhere. Brands like Pfizer, Cisco, General Electric, Mercedes-Benz, Vogue, Bethesda changed their logos on their flagship Twitter profiles, but made no changes to accounts targeting Middle Eastern markets. For example, Pfizer changed its logo in markets including America, Mexico, and Canada, but kept the same on Saudi Arabia. The trend sees companies signal alliance to the members of the LGBT community by simply revising their logos on social media channels, gained traction in around 2015, Fox reported, but has been waning in recent years. Well, is it because it's getting less free advertising? Is that possible? Maybe, is that possible why that might be? It's less valuable to them now. Vogue magazine had a multicolored pride logo as main profile, which has nearly 17 million followers and gets tens of interactions a day, as well as various other people. But a simple black and white logo remained for Vogue Arabia page, which has around 26,000 followers. Some users targeted Vogue Arabia by replying to a tweet published on June 2nd. Hey guys, you forgot to change your avatar to reflect pride. Weird, you missed the memo given that all other Vogue accounts have their pride profile pictures, wrote one user. The choice to express solidarity in some markets but not others has been used widely as basis to challenge the sincerity of such seemingly progressive gestures. Well, it should be, don't you think? It points out the hypocrisy, like, quite beautifully. It shows, it proves, that their support for the LGBTQ community is only profit deep. Eli David, an Israeli artificial intelligence developer, was one of the first to point out the hypocrisy via his own Twitter profile. Big corporations are running out of ink in their Middle East pages, he wrote on Saturday. What could possibly be the reason? Profit before actual pride, wrote one Twitter user in response. Uh-oh, rainbow capitalism is experiencing a sputter. It's not quite as profitable as it once was. That's terrible. BlackRock is one company to have changed its Twitter profile on multiple company profiles this year, though it does not have a Twitter profile for Middle Eastern markets. Shocking. German auto manufacturers BMW and Mercedes-Benz were two of the most striking companies who have made the political statements on Twitter and not the other. Mercedes logo was swapped out for the equivalent featuring bright colors of the pride flag, but not in the Middle East. I, for one, am shocked. I don't know about you all. You're probably shocked, too. This is just terrible. It's probably just a mistake. But it is interesting to discuss, kind of like, you know, I don't know how far, you know, the pushback is going to go and how aggressive it's going to stay. But I think there probably needs to be a new happy medium found here where, like, people don't have to get, you know, pummeled with the stuff for 30 straight days. By the way, I mean, it's not just in June anyway. It's every other month of the year too. But, you know, people are kind of sick of it. And, you know, you hope it doesn't go too far the other direction, but hopefully, you know, people won't have to, you know, set their VPNs to the Middle East so that they get a better video game experience and things of that nature. It's interesting to see how quickly they abandon them when you don't get the extra money for it. Although, then again, it really isn't that interesting because it's exactly that what we've been saying for years. This is a story I absolutely wanted to cover because it's hilarious. Jemele Hill, who got her big break essentially on ESPN, pretending to care about sports, but really just using it as a vehicle to push woke ideology on people, eventually getting terminated from the network, had another hilarious woke backfire. After demanding her boss give $100 million contract to a black podcast host for no reason other than being black, is no longer going to be working with Spotify. I wonder, how could that have happened? What a bizarre and racist thing to happen. I can't understand. She has 1/1000th of the following that Joe Rogan does. Why wouldn't Spotify just pay her the same they paid Joe Rogan? This is racism. I don't really know any other way to describe it. Anyway, Jemele Hill is now leaving Spotify after daring company to pay black host $100 million. Jemele Hill is leaving Spotify. The move comes as the service faces pressure to rein in costs and deliver profits, reports Bloomberg. And unlike other Spotify-distributed podcasts, Jemele Hill's never attracted any kind of substantial audience ever or delivered profits. Despite the platform endlessly promoting her show on its homepage, Jemele Hill's podcast does not even rank among the top 200. Jemele Hill is no match for the 197th ranked Professor Prof. Cal's Audios on Anya Smiley Face podcast, whatever that is. Jemele titled her podcast, Jemele Hill is Unbothered, though the show was anything but a podcast from an unbothered host. In fact, she built the show around the hypothesis of just how bothered she is with the state of the country, specifically how racist and how white America is. The episode list is full of unjust hysteria, featuring guests like rabble-rouser weirdo Ellie Mistal, who declared the Constitution trash on the program. Who doesn't want to hear two whiny multimillionaires decry the injustices they pretend to face? Based on Hill's ratings, not very many people. Undoubtedly, Jemele Hill and her supporters will attribute racism to her exit. Bloomberg was given the first information about her departure, racialized the move in the very first paragraph of the report. Well, is anybody really surprised by that? I mean, legitimately. You know, race is extremely profitable, and it's all the mainstream media really knows. I just talked about the plane that went down and how that was reported. Like, oh, they donated money to the GOP. That was leading the story, as opposed to, the terrible situation that it was. Quote, another prominent podcaster is leaving Spotify Technology SA as the company reverses many of its big investments on original audio and loses yet another black voice, writes the outlet. I mean, nobody's forcing her to leave. Calling Hill prominent and citing her race is how you secure scoops. They don't teach that in Journalism 101, however. The divorce also comes after Hill tried to extort money from Spotify in the name of equality. In 2022, she dared Spotify to give her, or another black host, but probably herself, the same money as Joe Rogan. What I would like to see, Hill said in an interview with the New York Times, is for Spotify to hand $100 million to someone who is black. Do you think that she probably actually does think this? First of all, there are many prominent black podcasts out there. I'd be willing to bet that there will be a black podcast host that makes $100 million in the near future. Podcasting is, probably the least barrier to entry thing in history, where people can really make a name for themselves. And, the idea, of course, is that she really wanted the $100 million, even if she wasn't even in the top 200. We better pay a black host Rogan money or we'll be called racist. That was the conclusion Hill hoped her employer would draw upon her challenge. However, Spotify did not comply. See, there is not a black podcaster worth Joe Rogan-type salary, nor is there another white podcaster worth $100 million. There is only one podcaster who is, and the podcaster who does, Joe Rogan. Rogan did not secure a nine-figure deal because of his whiteness. Spotify issued such terms to meet an expanding market demand. Hill has no such market. As we wrote at this time, Hill's demands exemplifies a problem with racially obsessed worldview. Hill cries racism when there is a successful white person who does not have a black counterpart. However, the top individual in any field, whether white or black, almost never has any equivalent. They're the top precisely because they don't have an equal. Rogan has no equal, neither does Oprah, and companies should not have to match their investments into said talents to comply with DE&I initiatives. Spotify has shown backbone, in resisting such pressure. It's called prioritizing business over public relations. More companies should try it. In short, Jemele Hill is not a sound investment. She moves the needle on Twitter, but that's to the extent. Brands have never been unable to monetize her outrage, and she provides a lot of it. Well, that's the thing. You know, a lot of times, that's what, you know, I've said for a long time about the left and their effectiveness at getting a lot of likes on Twitter stuff. You know, that never really equals sales, or very rarely does. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are really popular on Twitter that don't make any money from it and don't drive any sales. That's why they're like, please pay me $5 a month to view my tweets, even though all I do is steal other people's videos or stories and repackage them as my own. You know, I don't have any problem with people earning money, but these type of people don't actually add any value. They don't have any opinions of their own. They're just repackaging it and presenting it as their own. Once Hill leveraged her hysteria into a show called SC6 on ESPN, yet no one watched it. The show wasn't any good. Thereby, ESPN canceled it, and the hour has thrived ever since. Likewise, Hill hosted a show called Won't Stick to Sports on Vice TV with entitled brat Carrie Champion. We wish her producers well. That show also failed and is no longer on the air. Perhaps no one can measure Hill's stardom by her book sales. One can measure it, or lack thereof. That is, Hill released a memoir last October on her journey in overcoming, wait for it, racism. The book sold just 5,000 copies in 2 months, a number equal to some self-published cookbooks. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I can move 5,000 copies of a book relatively easily, and I wouldn't have anywhere near the help that Jemele Hill does. And what's great about all of this is, like, now she's come out and said, well, actually, I'm not shutting down. You see Bloomberg. Hill joins exodus of black podcasters leaving the platform. Who? And by the way, leaving the platforms, I mean, how many people have podcasts? Oh my God, I'm so tired. Podcasts all over the place, right? They're. I mean, you don't need to have... you know, you don't need to have Spotify. Spotify doesn't pay a lot of these people. The podcasts are just available there. If you read the article, you come to find out the writer's referencing, you know, she gave old, you know, so Jemele Hill writes, people, a lot of what's been reported isn't true. My podcast hasn't been canceled. I have never asked Spotify for $100 million. This stuff is truly comical. Next week's guest is Sabrina Elba. In the next coming weeks, Blair Underwood, Cassie, a bunch of people I don't know. I mean, except nobody cares. I think that it's pretty hilarious. It's like when all those MTV people try to be YouTubers, and we saw their real, like, their real viewership numbers, and that, like, literally nobody watched their shows. Nobody cared about their podcast or their YouTube videos. They were just, you know, nobody watched them. You see 100 likes per tweet. This is somebody with 1.4 million fake followers. You know, 1.4 million Pakistani bots. I think that it's pretty hilarious. Now, she did issue a statement. I don't think that she probably does. You know, the ultimatum to get $100 million was probably not specific, but we all know what she meant. You know, and I think that it's hilarious. And then you see, like, the woke, the root, mind your business and stop worrying about Jemele Hill's money. Why is Jemele Hill worried about everyone else's money then? You know, she's amounted to basically nothing more than a race grifter, just like any one of those, you know, BLM Inc. people who enrich themselves and while constantly complaining about how the world was against them. You know, and you see, as much as y'all trying to run with this fire narrative, I've still never been fired from a job in my whole life. Well, you've had numerous shows canceled. What would you call that? You know, I think it, the whole thing is pretty hilarious to me. You know, I think that, yeah, it's probably framing by OutKick, but it's still a hilarious story. And Jamel has said, says her podcast was not, quote, canceled, but didn't deny the cited Bloomberg report that she is, quote, leaving Spotify. In fact, she states she's leaving due to investment and growth differences, which Bloomberg reported and is cited below, was due to Spotify needing to, quote, rein in costs and deliver profits. She also never directly asked Spotify for $100 million. That is correct. But as also reported below, she publicly challenged Spotify to hand $100 million to somebody who is black, somebody as in one person, meaning herself or another black podcaster as reported. It's unclear what Jemele Hill thought to accomplish with her tweet. Perhaps all she cleared up was that she would be out of the company, but yet has not left. As of yet has not left. I love it. Make sure you get your Father's Day gift boxes today. Promo code DAD, link in the description. We'll talk to you again real soon.